Greetings, this is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. This is another in this occasional series of readings from and brief notes and commentary upon Eusebius of Caesarea's The Ecclesiastical History. Here is Book 9, Chapters 5 through 7. Chapter 5. Having forged, to be sure, memoirs of Pilate and our Savior, full of every kind of blasphemy against Christ, with the approval of their chief, they sent them round to every part of his dominions, with edicts that they should be exhibited openly for everyone to see in every place, both town and country, and that the primary teacher should give them to the children instead of lessons for study and committal to memory. While this was thus being carried out, another person, a commander, whom the Romans styled dux, caused certain infamous women to be abducted from the marketplace at Damascus in Phoenicia, and by continually threatening them with the infliction of tortures, compelled them to state in writing that they were once actually Christians and privy to their unhallowed deeds, and that the Christians practiced in the very churches lewdness and everything else that he wished these women to say in defamation of our faith. He also made a memorandum of their words and communicated it to the emperor, and moreover, at his command, published this document also in every place and city. Chapter 6. But not long afterward, he, that is to say the commander, died by his own hand, and thus paid the penalty for his wickedness. But as for us, banishments and severe persecutions were again renewed, and the rulers in every province once more rose up cruelly against us, with the result that some of those eminent in the divine word were taken and received the sentence of death without mercy. Of these, three in Emesa, a city of Phoenicia, were consigned to wild beasts as food, having declared themselves Christians. Among them was a bishop, Silvanus, exceedingly advanced in age, who had exercised his ministry for 40 entire years. At the same time, Peter also, who presided with great distinction over the communities at Alexandria, a truly divine example of a bishop on account of his virtuous life and his earnest study of the Holy Scriptures, was seized for no reason at all and quite unexpectedly, and then immediately and unaccountably beheaded, as if by the command of Maximin. And, along with him, many others of the Egyptian bishops endured the same penalty. Lucian, a most excellent man in every respect, of temperate life and well-versed in sacred learning, a presbyter of the community at Antioch, was brought to the city of Nicomedia, where the emperor was then staying, and, having made his defense before the ruler on behalf of the doctrine which he professed, he was committed to prison and put to death. So mightily, indeed, did that hater of the good, Maximin, contrive against us in a short space, that this persecution which he had stirred up seemed to us much more severe than the former one. Chapter 7. In fact, in the midst of the cities, a thing that had never happened before, petitions presented against us by cities and rescripts containing imperial ordinances in reply were set up, engraved on brazen tablets. While the children in the schools had every day on their lips the names of Jesus and Pilate and the memoirs forged to insult us. At this point, I think it necessary to insert this same document of Maximin that was set up on tablets so as to make manifest at once the boastful, overweening arrogance of this hater of God and the divine justice that followed close upon his heels with its sleepless hatred of the evil in wicked men. It was this which smote him, and not long afterwards he reversed his policy with regard to us and made a decree by laws in writing. Copy of a translation of the rescript of Maximin in answer to the petitions against us, taken from the tablet at Tyre. Now at length the feeble boldness of the human mind has shaken off and dispersed all blinding mists of error, the error which hitherto was attacking the senses of men, not so much wicked as wretched, and was wrapping them in the baneful darkness of ignorance. And it has been enabled to recognize that it is governed and established by the benevolent providence of the immortal gods. It passes belief to say how grateful, how exceeding pleasant and agreeable it is proved to us that you have given a very great proof of your godly disposition, Since even before this, none could be ignorant with what regard and piety you were displaying toward the immortal gods, in whom is manifested a faith, not of bare and empty words, but constant and admirable in its noble deeds. Wherefore your city might worthily be called a temple and dwelling place of the immortal gods. Certainly, by many signs, it appears that it flourishes, because there the immortal gods sojourn. Behold, therefore, your city put away all thought for its own private advantage and neglected former requests for its own affairs, when once again it perceived that the followers of that accursed folly were beginning to spread as a neglected and smoldering pyre, which, when its fires are rekindled into flames, forms once more a mighty conflagration. Then, immediately and without any delay, it had recourse to our piety as to a metropolis of all religious feeling, requesting some healing and help. It is evident that the gods have placed in your heart this saving thought on account of your faith and godly fear. Accordingly, it was he, the most excellent and mighty, even Zeus, he who presides over your far-famed city, he who protects your ancestral gods and women and children and hearth and home from all destruction, who inspired your hearts with this saving purpose. It was he who plainly showed how excellent and splendid and saving a thing it is to draw nigh to the worship and sacred rites of the immortal gods with due reverence. For who can be found so senseless or bereft of all intelligence as not to perceive that it is by the benevolent care of the gods that the earth does not refuse the seeds committed to it, and thus disappoint the husbandmen of their hope with vain expectation? Or again, that the specter of unholy war does not plant itself without opposition upon earth, so that squalid bodies are dragged off to death, while the wholesome air of heaven is polluted? Or indeed, that the sea does not toss and swell under the blasts of immoderate winds? Or that hurricanes do not burst without warning and stir up a death-dealing tempest? Or still further, that the earth, the nurse and mother of all, does not sink from its deepest hollows with fearful tremor, and the mountains that lie upon it crash into the resulting chasms? For all these evils, and evils even more terrible, have happened many a time before this, as everyone knows. And all these things happen at once because of the baneful error and vain folly of those unhallowed men, when that error that took possession of their souls, and one might almost say, oppressed the whole world everywhere with its deeds of shame. After other remarks, he adds, "Let them behold in the broad plains the crops already ripe with waving ears of corn, the meadows, thanks to opportune rains, brilliant with plants and flowers, and the weather that has been granted us temperate and very mild. Further, let all rejoice, since through our piety, through the sacrifices and venerations we have rendered, the most powerful and intractable air has been propitiated. And let them take pleasure in that they therefore enjoy the most serene peace securely and in quiet. And let as many as have been wholly rescued from that blind folly and error and returned to a right and goodly frame of mind rejoice indeed, the more as if they were delivered from an unexpected hurricane or severe illness and were reaping life's sweet enjoyment for the future. But if they persist in their accursed folly, let them be separated and driven far away from your city and neighborhood, even as you requested, that so, in accordance with your praiseworthy zeal in this respect, your city may be separated from all pollution and impiety, and, following its natural desire, may respond with due reverence to the worship of the immortal gods. And that you may know how pleasing this your request has been to us, and how fully disposed to benevolence our soul is, of its own accord, apart from petitions and entreaties, we permit your devotedness to ask whatsoever bounty you wish in return for this godly intent. And now let it be your resolve so to do and receive, for you will obtain your bounty without delay, the granting of which to your city will furnish a testimony forevermore of your godly piety towards the immortal gods, and a proof to your sons and descendants that you have met with the due meed of reward from our benevolence on account of these, your principles of conduct. This was emblazoned against us in every province, excluding every ray of hope from our condition, at least as far as human help is concerned. so that, in accordance with the divine oracle itself, if possible, even the elect themselves should be caused to stumble at these things. In truth, expectation was already almost failing in very many souls, when all at once, while those serving the writ set forth against us were on their way and had not yet finished their journey in some districts, the champion of his own church, even God, stopping, as it were, the proud boasting of the tyrant against us, displayed his heavenly aid on our behalf. Here ends Book 9 and Chapters 5 through 7, and we'll move on to some notes and commentary. These chapters describe the renewal of persecution against Christians under the tyrant Maximin. Chapter 5 describes a forged memoir concerning Pilate that blasphemed Christ. The pagans widely distributed this false report and even required teachers in schools to review it with their young students. It is also related in this chapter that a commander, or dux, D-U-X, compelled certain infamous women to claim to be former Christians and to spread false stories of lewd practices in the churches, which were recorded in documents and then widely published. Chapter 6 begins by describing how this dux eventually paid for his own sin of spreading these false stories about the Christians by taking his own life. Meanwhile, however, the persecution for the believers only increased. Three were put to death in Emesa of Phoenicia by being given over to the wild beasts. Among these was Silvanus, the bishop, who had served as bishop for over 40 years. Peter of Alexandria was beheaded along with other Egyptian bishops. Lucian, the presbyter of Antioch, stood before the emperor at Nicomedia, was imprisoned and then put to death. Maximum's zeal made this persecution seem worse than the earlier Diocletian persecution. Chapter 7 notes how Maximin set up brazen tablets in the cities describing petitions against the Christians and his ordinances issued in reply to these petitions. All the while, children in the schools were still being taught from the forged memoir of Pilate regarding false accounts of Jesus. Eusebius also provides a translation of one of the ordinances that came from Maximin, one that was in the city of Tyre. And Maximin, of course, is described as not only a hater of the good, but a hater of God. This tablet commends the pagans for continuing to worship the immortal gods rather than be deceived by the Christians. He asserts that the pagans who had continued in the worship of their gods were being protected and rewarded by Zeus for this. Those like the Christians who failed to worship the gods put the city at risk for failure of crops, defeat in war, and suffering under storms. Such tablets were posted, says Eusebius, in every city, and gloom came over the Christians. Just, however, when the believers were about to despair, God, whom Eusebius describes as the champion of his own church, intervened. And we'll surely learn about that intervention in the chapters to come. In conclusion, the respite from the Diocletian persecution was short-lived. The reputations of Christians were smeared by false reports, even through the indoctrination of children in schools. Pagans were apparently blaming Christians for things like crop failures, wars, and storms, and they were saying that these things were coming upon them because they did not properly worship the gods. Though disheartening, Eusebius still has a hopeful note as he writes this in order to encourage believers to endure, reminding them that relief would be just around the corner and that God, again, the champion of his own church, would intervene and help believers as they endured this type of persecution. Well, this brings this episode to a conclusion. I hope this has been helpful and edifying to those who are listening, and I'll look forward to speaking to you in the next episode in this series. Till then, take care and God bless.